Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live, where we bring you the best in music, books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us. Now, here is your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. I think when you hear the name Beethoven, a lot of things may come to mind, but definitely great music will be one of them. A lot of us, though, don't think about the man himself, though, and what it was like for him to not only to be a creator during his time, but also to deal with the challenges that he did as well. Our next guest, though, has been able to take us to a place I think that all of us, I think, can be able to relate to and also maybe be able to put ourselves in. We're excited to welcome to our program today Howard J. Smith. He's the author of the book Beethoven in Love, Opus 139. We're going to talk to Howard not only about his novel, but also what it was like for him to try to see the world as Beethoven did, to experience the things that he did with the challenges, but also what his big takeaway was as well. Now, if you're just hearing about the book, we'll tell you a little bit later how you can get it for yourself. But Howard, hello to you, and welcome to the program.
Thank you, Cyrus. Absolute pleasure to be here.
Hey, the pleasure's definitely all mine. You know, when I finished the book, which was actually last week, Howard, the first thing that came to my mind was, you know, it is so interesting to me how we can read something that takes place at a time so different in many ways than the times that we live in, but definitely dealing with people. So that means that we all kind of have those same feelings and emotions and things that we experience. What has it been like for you already, Howard, as the book came out last month? What has it been like for you to hear from readers about how much they can relate to the journey that Beethoven was on?
Well, it's been an absolute delight. I have connected with people as I've been working on the marketing of this book all over the world, particularly musicians, writers, and the like. And people can relate to Beethoven first as a man, as a person, because the essence of the book is not only his life as he lived it and the women who loved him, which makes for a good read, but also how do you deal with the troubles and failings of your life. This is Beethoven's essential struggle that he has to master in the novel, and those struggles relate to his hearing loss as a performing artist. I mean, he started losing his hearing in his 20s, was fully deaf by the time he's 40s. How do you deal with that as a musician, as a composer, hide it from people as he had to do? He also was striving both for family, which he never got to really have, and got himself involved in a horrible custody war, which he was definitely on the wrong side of that battle. And he never, ever was able to have the kind of romantic relationship that he wanted with a woman. He had many lovers over the course of his lifetime. This we know from reading his diaries, his letters, and so forth. And he even wrote one of the most famous love letters in history, kind of appropriate as we're coming upon Valentine's Day. But he did not put the name of the woman who that letter was written to on the top of the letter. She obviously knew who she was, but history does not know. And to this day, there are half a dozen or more families that still debate it was their ancestor who was the immortal beloved of his letter. Yeah. I've even been able to connect with one of Giulietta Giacardi's great-great-great-grandsons, five times removed. Giulietta is the woman who he wrote the Moonlight Sonata for. It was not called the Moonlight at that time. But he was kind enough to also send me a picture of his mother, who's 94, lives in London, was married to a member of the House of Lords, with a bust of Giulietta next to her. This is something that their families all believe, that she may well have been that woman in his life. History may look at it differently. But again, having connected with all these people, they all feel an affinity for Beethoven. And the bottom line of that is his music. He was a rock star of his time, not as we know it quite today, but he transformed music. And you got a picture, if it's like going back to the 50s and listening to the quartets singing Mr. Sandman in five-part harmony, and all of a sudden here comes Jimi Hendrix blowing the universe away with Purple Haze. His transformation of the music world at that time was that radical and that different. And he was definitely a change and disruptive agent in terms of how music was perceived. And the reason for that is he transformed music from what was about structure and form to music that was about feelings, passions, emotions, stories, and it's the same things we relate to today. You can't listen to a Beethoven piece without moving. It just gets into your bones, the same as the Rolling Stones or some of the more modern groups.
You know, Howard, I'm going to come back to Beethoven as the person in a moment. One of the things that reviewers have said, one reviewer that I read about this book, Beethoven in Love, Opus 139, was that it was a labor of love. I mean, what is it that led you to say this was a story, this was a life that I want to be able to explore?
Beethoven was an absolutely fascinating person in that here he is, perhaps one of the world's greatest composers, who could not even hear his own music. In my own life, I have a touch of dyslexia. I can't play music. I can't remember rhythms and rhymes. And there was a certain affinity there to how do you, like Beethoven did, how do you write the Ninth Symphony, which he did when he was 54 years old? He was totally deaf. How do you write what might be the single greatest piece of music that includes the famous Ode to Joy? How do you write that when you're 100% deaf? What kind of drive and motivation in your life would enable one to do that? And that was a question I wanted to discover. That was one aspect. The other aspect is the story of his actual death. This is a story you can't make up. He was 56 years old. He's been in a coma for 2 days. His friends know he's going to die, and most of them leave his apartment to go make funeral arrangements. One stays behind with him. There's a snowstorm and a thunderstorm going on at the same time. And a bolt of lightning strikes the window right outside his room. And all of a sudden, Beethoven wakes from this coma, his eyes open wide. He clenches his fist. He purportedly shakes it at the heavens, and then he's gone. And I had a near-death experience in my life when I was younger, motorcycle accident. And what I learned in that moment was that it was actually very calm and very peaceful and a point of total relaxation. There was no fear, there was no dread, there was no anger. And I asked myself, was Beethoven angry when he died? Or maybe an alternate interpretation, this is a man who wanted to find one day of joy in his life, to find that beloved, whoever she may have been, or any love, and maybe he was in fact not cursing and shaking his hand at the gods, but maybe he was grasping the hand of the goddess and pulling himself into heaven or Elysium, as he called it in that time. And the novel, in a metaphoric sense, takes place in that moment where Beethoven meets essentially his ghost of Christmas past, and is forced to confront all the problems and failings of his life in order to find peace and contentment with it. That's the novel.
Yeah, and you know, I want to go to something actually in the book because it goes to the man. And I think a lot of times we just think about the music, as I think for a lot of people, you know, you just enjoy the music. You don't really think a lot. And I love the fact that you're able to, and I definitely want to talk to you about this, Howard, able to kind of take us into his feelings about where he was at a particular time. This is what you wrote, and then we'll talk a little bit about it. I could not have felt any lower or more depressed. Why was I made so different? God's joke, a deaf musician without love, without life. I had failed on such a grand scale that if the clock of my life had shattered right then and there, it would have been a blessed relief. You know, the thing that I thought was so interesting about that was, of course, we would look at him and not even imagine that he would ever have moments like that. What was it like for you to get to the mortality of the man and the way that how he didn't even recognize the greatness that he was at times?
That line that you quoted is actually from a document that's called the Heiligenstadt Testament. It was found after his death, but it was written almost 30 years earlier. And it was a suicide note, which he did not commit suicide at that point in his life. But he truly felt in his late 20s, early 30s, and you know how all of our famous rock stars died at 27, Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, and Jim Morrison, The Doors, Kurt Cobain. Beethoven was in a similar class at that moment in his life. He was beginning to realize he was losing his hearing. He was in dread of being a musician who was going deaf, who had no future. And he truly thought about killing himself. And what he really wanted at that moment, as he looked at his life and tried to figure out why he, of all people, felt cursed by God to be made this brilliant musician and to suddenly be cursed and lose his hearing. He struggled with that, and he decided to fight back. Rather than killing himself, he ended up writing the most famous pieces that we know of his music in the next roughly 10 years. We had that opportunity to write the Fifth Symphony, the Sixth Symphony, the Seventh, the Eighth, his great piano concertos, his violin concerto, a whole host of things that are the bread and butter of what we listen to today in Beethoven, all came out in that period, that heroic period. But in his in the novel, he is traveling, as I said, in this fog, this Elysium, and the only person he meets or thinks he meets is the ghost of Napoleon, who is his exact contemporary. And as they're wrestling in the ethers, and again, Napoleon plays that role, the ghost of Christmas past, prodding him to deal with his life, Napoleon says to him, "I know you wrote the Third Symphony, the Heroic Symphony, or the Eroica as it's known. You wrote it originally about me. The first title was Bonaparte. But the one I really like is the Ninth." Beethoven looks at him and says, "The Ninth? But you were dead when I wrote it." Napoleon comes back and says, "I may be dead, but I'm not deaf." And it just drives Beethoven crazy as he realizes he, even in this moment of passing into the heavens forever, he's still struggling with deafness and still cursed with this. And in the novel, again, he's got to wrestle with all of these issues and find some way to do it. And in the process, that we also meet the women he loved, his brothers, the dukes and duchesses of the aristocracy that were his close friends, and we hear from them their perspective on this man and how they loved and adored him. And a lot of these things that we hear about are different than the history we've been told about Beethoven, because the initial biography about him was written by a named Anton Schindler, and it was mostly falsified. Schindler had worked for Beethoven as a minor assistant in the last year or two of his life, and Beethoven's personal property was to be handled by his close friend, Stefan von Breuning, his executor of his estate. But unfortunately, Stefan died himself 4 months later. And Schindler steps in, gathers up all of Beethoven's stuff. We have 6 volumes of letters written to and from Beethoven. We have his diaries. We have these books called conversation books where people would write questions to him. He would answer them verbally. All this enormous amount of information about his life. And Schindler doctored it all to inject himself into Beethoven's life and make it seem as if he had been Beethoven's friend for 10, 15 years and knew everything about him. Right. And most subsequent biographies for the next 150 years until the 70s and 80s of this last century were based on Schindler's work, much of which was falsified. And it wasn't until modern scholarship really began to reexamine the documents and do more accurate translations, they realize just to the extent that this impression we have of Beethoven as this angry, iconoclastic man was simply not true. It's a man who went out to dinner every night with his friends, friends that were friends for a lifetime. There were women in his life who adored him, and he wrote many love letters throughout his life to these people. And as I said, many of them were to Julietta, or her cousin Josephine later on when Julietta turned him down. There's a whole host of things that in this book I try to work in there to give a really full-rounded profile of Beethoven, the life he lived, and the struggles he had as a man.
And I think that is what definitely makes it so enjoyable and also makes it a book that is timeless, and his life something that is timeless. Howard, I want to talk more about that. For those who are just tuning in, he's on the radio side or online. You're listening to Conversations Live. Howard J. Smith is making his first appearance on our program today. We're discussing his book, Beethoven in Love, Opus 139. If you're just hearing about the book, we'll tell you at the end of the broadcast how you can stay connected with Howard, but also how you can get the book for yourself. You know, the other thing is you mentioned the conversations with Napoleon and Ian as he's referred to in the book at times. And, you know, I think, you know, the thing is that I thought about when you were talking about that was this one conversation between them where, you know, basically he was saying, you know, I mentioned this to you before we went on here, you are writing about things that you know nothing about. You don't have the things that you write about. And here is Beethoven says, but can I want it? And, you know, I think that is such a great thing, because a lot of times in the creative community, as an author even, you're able to write about and create worlds that maybe you don't necessarily know. You know, I'm curious, though, what was that like for you as an author, Howard, to be able to look at this man who, you know, and even the idea of what an author is has changed and evolved over the past, you know, 10, 20 years. What was it like for you to look at how he was looked at as an individual, as a musician, as an artist, and to think about yourself as an artist as well today?
Well, let me go back a step. I've been a writer my entire life. This is my third book. I've done a lot of short stories, articles, a whole host of things over a long career, a lot of screenplays, and spent a good number of years in Hollywood. And when I set about to do this, at first I thought, oh, this is an interesting story, when I heard about his death and how that might play out. And I said, oh, I'll read a biography, I'll find the empty space that we don't know, and I'll come up with something. And when I read the first biography of Beethoven, I realized just how much we actually did know about his life. And that if I was going to do this, take on this project, and do it about a famous man, I had to be accurate, I had to be good, I had to do it well. And early in my career, I was very fortunate. I was a Breadloaf scholar for a number of years at Middlebury College summer writing program, and I got to work with people like Toni Morrison, Tim O'Brien, John Irving, and the late John Gardner, who I did actually a number of projects with John, and he was kind of my writing mentor. I even have a character in the book who is very roughly, and I stress roughly, based on John, who encounters Beethoven, and they talk music and writing throughout the book. But John inspired me to say, if you're going to do something, you sure as hell might as well do it really well. And I know all of these people that I studied with, they all won National Book Awards or Pulitzer Prizes. They wrote to great acclaim. And I realized the size and scope of this project was such that if I was going to do it and follow through to the very end, I had to write it at a level of quality that it too could be in the discussion for a National Book Award. I set out with that goal, and when I was about three-quarters done, I met a man who's now since become a very good friend of mine, and he had written the book Beethoven's Hair about 15 years ago. His name was Russell Martin, and I showed it to Russell, and we got together for a drink one afternoon. He looks at me, and he says, "You're there," and I was being three-quarters done. He got that this book is of that level of quality, and that the work I had put in, and this is 5 years of work, two were just simply research, whereas building up an outline of notes that I wanted to integrate not only Beethoven's life, his music, but the history of the times. And there's some really funny things that happened along this journey. In reading a biography about Napoleon, I read the name of this village in what I always thought was Lithuania, was actually in Belarus. That is my maternal grandmother's village. And that Napoleon, when he's retreating from Moscow during the war in 1812, he had lost 90% of his army. 500,000 men on his side were dead, as many Russian soldiers were dead, and probably three or four times as many civilians had died during that 6 months of warfare in the dead of winter. And Napoleon gets to this village, which is called Smorgoni, and suddenly he's safe. He's far enough away from the Russian troops, and there he gets a dispatch from Paris telling him that people in Paris think he's dead, that there's been an attempted coup, and he needs to return right away. He gets fresh horses from his troops in the city of Vilna, which is not far away. He gets in a sled and races back to Paris in what then was a record 2 weeks' time to put down the coup. But that village, as I said, there's only 1,000 people in that village. And as I'm finishing my writing research, I'm Googling pictures of Napoleon, and there I find a drawing done in 1911 by a Polish artist commemorating the 100th anniversary of the war. And it is of that moment in time and history. And here he's drawing the same year my grandmother left Belarus to come to America. He's drawing a picture of that village with Napoleon in it. How strange is that, to be doing a piece of fiction and suddenly finding your own family history crosses through that book? It was just mind-blowing to see that. And I actually wrote a scene that takes place in that village that night, which is based on four actual true stories, condensed and reset back in 1812.
So other than being able to entertain and even, I think, to give a fresh look at Beethoven, Howard, what is your hope when someone finishes the book? What do you want them to be able to take away that they'll be able to think about and maybe even share with someone else?
Well, one is that each one of us should try to come to peace with who we are in our lives, the good, the bad. There's a line in the book called "Seek perfection, accept failure," that Mozart says to a very young Beethoven, and it's basically that in everything we do, to always strive to do your best, but to realize that we're all human beings, we're all frail, we all have our foibles, and that to have mercy on yourself, to not judge yourself harshly, provided you're always trying to do your best. That's one thing. And again, to try to find in that peace and a day of joy. That's one aspect of it. The other, it's a good read. It's a fun read. Most people who I've talked to or reviewers have said, I couldn't put it down. It's a journey that is a lot of fun, and you learn things about the world, yourself, history, music, on many, many different levels. And each reader will come to it from a different place and walk away with different things. But it's just woven with all kinds of fascinating textures of the time and even modern times.
Right. Well, I totally agree. It definitely is a great read, and I know their audience will enjoy it. Again, we're talking about Beethoven in Love, Opus 139 by Howard J. Smith. So make sure you guys head over to our friends at Amazon.com and get it for yourself, or go to your favorite bookstore. If they don't have it, they'll be more than happy to order it for you. Howard, how can our audience stay connected with you and keep up what's coming up next for you?
Well, they can friend me on Facebook. That's the simplest thing. You know, Howard J. Smith, I'm there. Send me a friend notice. Be happy to link you in. I've done a lot of readings, a lot of broadcasts and conversations like this, and will continue to do many, and they may be in your neighborhood, your neck of the woods. And, for example, we were just down at Book Soup 2 weeks ago doing a reading there on the Sunset Strip. Sunday night I'm going to be on a radio show in New York. So, connect with me. The events are there, and, you know, find the book. The easiest way actually is probably through Amazon right now. There is an e-book version, and there's also the print version. And the artwork I'll mention is done by my son, who in his own right, Zach Smith, is a fairly famous artist who's been in 8 museums around the world. And it was an absolute delight to have him produce the cover art for me in this case, because usually I stand at the end of line when waiting for his work, but it was a real honor to have him do that for me. And it's a gorgeous picture that in its own right has captured people's attention.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, what a great thing, and how to make it a family affair as well. Again, everyone, Howard J. Smith has been our guest. Beethoven in Love, Opus 139 is the title of the book. Howard, thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate it.
Cyrus, thank you as well. It's been an absolute delight speaking with you, and hope we have a time and chance to do this again.
Looking forward to that for sure. For our radio audience, you all stay where you are. There's more Conversations Live to come for you. For those joining us online, though, we are going to lose you. So if you came in late, you missed part of the conversation with Howard, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you all can catch the replay right after we go off the air. The link is already available to our social media friends. So head over to Facebook.com/CyrusWeb or go over to Twitter.com/CyrusWeb. I've already tagged Howard actually on both of those places, so you guys can easily find him there as well. Make sure you're following him there. Click on that link. You can listen to the show completely for free and share it with your friends using the buttons you'll find there on your left-hand side of your screen. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live today. You all make it a great one.